Welcome to Syncreate. This is a show where we explore the intersections between creativity, psychology, and spirituality. We believe everyone has the capacity to be creative, and our goal is to demystify the creative process and expand the boundaries of what it means to be creative. I'm Melinda Rothaus, and I help individuals and organizations bring their creative dreams and visions to life. So my very special guest today is Dr. Marina Smirnova, and she is a full professor at Saybrook University, where I also teach and where I did my PhD. And she is the head of the Consciousness, Spirituality, and Integrative Health specialization there. So among many other things and talents and interests that she has, kind of our focus, our theme for today is creativity and transpersonal psychology. So in the podcast tagline, I always talk about, I mention the spiritual element, but in some shows, it's a little more in the background. And I feel like today it's going to be more in the foreground. So I'm really excited about that. So welcome, Marina. So happy to have you here on the show today.
Thank you so much, and welcome, Melinda, and welcome to all viewers and listeners.
Yes, great. So I kind of want to start, you know, for those who may not be familiar with the term transpersonal psychology and how that relates to consciousness and spirituality, I wonder if you could just give us like a little kind of overview of that field. Yeah,
certainly. Transpersonal psychology really was born, if you will, at the time when humanistic psychology was really beginning to take root. And in fact, a number of individuals who contributed a great deal to developing and founding humanistic psychology are also responsible for founding and developing transpersonal psychology. Think of transpersonal psychology as a psychology that allows us to incorporate all of the personal elements that mainstream is so great about weaving together, looking at, contemplating, considering, but it's also has taken us beyond and through the personal, in a very vast, deep way that incorporates wisdom traditions of the world.
Yes.
Wisdom, you know, that's alive and well in all of us in some levels, yes, whether we're consciously aware of it or not. And it certainly is honoring highest human potentials. Spirituality, yes, and offers another perspective, perhaps an expanded perspective on the psyche itself or human soul.
Yes, beautiful, beautiful summary. So, you know, at Saybrook, we really focus on kind of the humanistic side of psychology, which has perhaps a bit more holistic focus than, you know, often mainstream psychology delves into, and certainly looking at matters like consciousness and spirituality, creativity, and all of these things that make us whole and complete as human beings. And so I'm curious, you know, definitely want to hear a little bit more about your journey. You're originally from Russia, from Sakhalin Island. And personally, I'm very curious to hear a little bit more about your experiences growing up. And then you came to the U.S. to study, and you've been here ever since. So I guess maybe where I want to go first is, what drew you personally to this field of transpersonal psychology? Were there certain experiences, perhaps growing up or in your life journey, that, you know, we all come to psychology for a reason, I feel like, right? And there are certain things that lead us there. So were there any sort of pivotal moments for you? I'm sure.
I'm glad you asked, Melinda. Yes, thank you. Looking back, I see that in childhood, I was maybe about 4 or 5, I had an experience that lifted the veil for me. Mm. And at that time, I did not have any language for this, right? It was in summertime on Island Sakhalin, of Sakhalin Island in Russia. And usually summers are very rainy and kind of summer weather is very short-lived. And so it was one of those perfect days, the sun was shining. And I was in a daycare, a government daycare, with a friend of mine sitting, you know, at the table. And all of a sudden, I was with her. And at the same time, I was so much connected with so much more than that moment in time. And being in that state of dual awareness, being a girl, a young girl, who is sitting with a friend and enjoying the sunshine, enjoying the moment, and being also so much more than a single individual. And as that veil lifted, as I recall it now, it all of a sudden shifted me into the more, whatever that more was supposed to be. And of course, you know, later on, I had a variety of experiences, including one where I felt that a miracle happened, subjective, yes, and I was there, I was in third grade. That anchored further that what we perceive as just ordinary reality is only a small part of what is. And the desire for the more deepened for me.
Yes.
As a young woman giving birth to my child after the labor, I actually had a powerful mystical experience. And that was ineffable. That's something that I, for a long time, could not describe, could not even share with anyone about until such a time that then I've learned more, transpersonal psychology, what that is and how that is.
Yeah.
And I've learned really more about transpersonal psychology after my traditional master's degree in counseling.
That's so fascinating.
Very much like the program, but I had to go beyond that.
Yes, I know there's always more to explore and study, right? But I love that you pointed to this early childhood experience, because I actually had something similar but different. And I was around the same age, 4 to 5 years old. I was playing outside by myself out in the yard. We were living in Augusta, Georgia at the time, where my parents were working. And I just remember having this vivid thought that sort of came out of nowhere. And it was, this whole life is just a dream. And one day I'm going to wake up. You know, and it was so powerful and stayed with me my whole life. And then it's become this sort of koan, right? And then I, you know, later found myself drawn to spiritual questions and traditions and, you know, this theme of waking up, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
So.
That's right. I'm so glad that you had this experience and you continue to treasure it.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing this experience, because early experiences are so potent and valuable, and they also give us a clue about what is to come, how things are to unfold.
Yes. Yes. Beautiful. So I'm curious to what you were saying before, you know, the more that you started to learn about transpersonal psychology, it sounds like you were able to put some of these earlier experiences of something greater, something more, into a particular context. So can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like, how have you made meaning of these experiences based on your understanding of transpersonal psychology?
Yes, thank you. And speaking about that early experience when I was 4 or 5 that I just shared, the contexts were so rich on Island Sakhalin for me that I did not dismiss this experience at all. And I was not concerned about it. I was not worried, but I treasured that in a very private, delightful, childlike way.
Yes. I felt similarly, my experience.
I'm so glad. And so I trust that, and I sense that both of us in this way, we're supported contextually to hold this experience and to hold on to it. So I honor the diversity, the cultural diversity that was offered to me on the island.
Yes.
And the beauty, physical beauty of that place, mm-hmm. just the absolute magnificence of it and mystery, somehow also were woven into the backdrop of this experience.
Yes.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and it's interesting that you said supported by, because, you know, I'm thinking, you know, my parents weren't particularly spiritual or religious, but I feel that I've always had this sort of almost kind of mystical inclination. I'm not quite sure where that came from, but I think nature is a big part of that. And you mentioned the magnificence of the landscape and the island, and that, you know, it's not just people who can support us in our journey, but the world itself and the experience of being in nature and connecting in that way is so important.
That's exactly right, Melinda. That's exactly right, because we're surrounded by beauty. And beauty is within and without when we're willing to see it.
Yes.
Yes. And as I grew older, you know, to return to your question earlier, as I grew older, I was really gravitating to places that are resonating with me. They may not be beautiful in objective way, but subjectively, they were so important to me. Hmm. And to this very day, and I would imagine it will continue, what helps me to integrate my experiences is this context that I continue to co-weave and co-create with others, with nature, with being a part of, in that sense, you know, part of spiritual communities, educational communities, communities that are transpersonal in the U.S. and abroad. And, you know, it's interesting that you speak about nature and how it is pivotal, yes, to hold us. Last summer, unexpectedly, I moved to Sedona from Michigan.
Yes, I was just going to mention, yes. Unexpectedly.
Yes.
I'm intrigued.
Yes, that's a story. Yes, very interesting story. And Sedona to me is that container now that is so resonant with me. All I need to do is just step outside, even if it's for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever, however much time I have at the time. I look at the sky. I look at the landscape. You know, how nature has willed it to be. And I'm renewed.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm renewed.
Beautiful.
Yes, this move was totally a part of this spontaneous creative process with sprinkles of logic and cognitive engagement.
Yes. So did you visit Sedona and then you were moved to relocate, or how did that happen?
Yes, it's a very interesting story, and it speaks to the power of intuition.
Yes.
And the power of trust that the cosmos will continue to behold us.
Yes.
As needed, you know, maybe not as we want at the moment, but as needed and as helpful. I really came to a point where I realized, okay, I spent over 20 years in Michigan and I'm drawn elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that elsewhere was truly also marked by magnificent beauty, natural beauty,
mm-hmm.
that is very similar to the beauty of the island I was
born. Okay.
Yeah, so there's this creative, this intuitive return, yes,
yeah.
to something that is calling us. And I was ready to go. I reduced all of my belongings to a car.
Wow.
Yes, Honda CRV.
That is quite an accomplishment, by the way.
Thank you. Yes, and it's also quite a deep transpersonal process and also creative process. Mm-hmm. Took me a long time.
Yeah.
And so my dog and I ventured off, live in Michigan, and I had a previous arrangement to meet with a friend of mine whom I've known for a very long time, we actually went to the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology together, graduated.
Okay.
Just different cohorts. Yeah. So connections, yes. Mm-hmm. And we agreed to meet in New Mexico. So spend maybe a couple of days in Santa Fe and then go to California. I have a number of people I know in California. So I thought, oh, I'm going to, you know, visit. And then my dog, Star, and I will go where we plan to go.
Yes.
So needless to say, we went to Santa Fe, and then my friend says, okay, we're now going to California. I'd like to stop in Sedona.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, I'm really not drawn to Sedona at all. Can we just skip that?
Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So can we just skip that part? And of course, because we've known each other for a very long time, we could just speak very frankly about this. And he says, you know, I haven't been to Sedona for 20 years. I said, I've never been to Sedona. And I don't really feel like I should be going to Sedona, you know.
Interesting.
I was so adamant about it.
Yeah.
Insistent, and almost to the point of that finally I had to say, you know, because you're my friend, this is the only reason I will go to Sedona with you and put it on the record. This is the only reason. And little did I know, on day two, I knew I was supposed to be here.
Wow. So, okay, this is so interesting to me because sometimes it's sort of, it reminds me of the hero's journey, right? We hear the call to adventure and often we resist it at first. There's a resistance, right? Until we can no longer. So I'm curious, like, what do you make of that initial resistance that you had?
Yes, yes. And it was even, you know, it was so stark.
Yeah.
And so almost alerting, not really alarming, but alerting.
Yeah.
For me, that it really signified something of the essence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are others, many others who have experienced that pull in a very similar way where they were absolutely resisting to go with,
yes,
whether that's their gift, their destiny, their calling, what have you. You know, James Hillman in his book, The Soul's Code, gives us many examples of how the daimon or the guardian angel or that guiding principle, yes, that goes by many names, shows up in our lives. And quite often, and he gives a particular example of a writer who, as a girl, you know, just like would not, you know, even, you know, approach, did not want to do reading, nothing that had to do
with
what she's here to do.
Right.
And yes. And so there's a sense of, no, I'm not going there. And I would imagine that it has its own wisdom and protective qualities.
Yes. That just occurred to me. Like maybe when we initially hear the call, maybe we're not quite ready yet, or we're not quite ripe for that experience.
Yes. And you know, you've noticed this, and this exactly was also true for me in some sense, because looking back, I was scheduled to be in Sedona in May of 2012.
Interesting.
With a group of women, and we were going to study here with indigenous healer local, who since then moved to another state. And because I was in my doctorate program, things folded in such a way that I thought, okay, I really need to prioritize right now my doctorate journey, my, you know, dissertation journey. And this is what I chose to do. And look, returned back
to
Sedona, only under circumstances where, you know, I could have embraced that, you know, initially, right?
Yeah, sure.
That invitation. But initially it was, oh no, let's skip that part.
Yeah.
Something in us knows. But day two, I really knew that is the place I'm supposed to be. And it shocked my friend.
Yeah.
And my friend said, like, are you sure?
What happened?
What happened here? And I said, yes, I'm sure this is what happened and that's how it's going to be. And nature had something to do with that.
And was it an energetic feeling or was it something of the landscape or perhaps they're inseparable?
Yes, they are so woven together here. I believe it was this, that, and then some.
Yeah.
We went to visit one of the vortexes here. And, you know, he went for a portion of the way we went together. And then my dog and I went one way, my friend went another. So we can all have our, you know, our own experiences.
Sure.
How we wanted it to be. And so my dog Star and I reached a certain point, kind of a plateau, so to speak, plateau. And we sat down under a seemingly unalive tree. And had an experience there with a person who was passing by, a woman. It was a very mysterious experience.
Hmm.
And said, there's some more. And it was clear that that is the place. That is the place. So Sedona is known for incredible beauty.
Yeah.
Absolutely breathtaking landscape. And certainly the energy in Sedona is very unique, one of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
And people come here, they quite often just cannot take enough of the surroundings.
Yeah.
And here is another transpersonal kind of weave here. I've heard this from a number of individuals who have been in Sedona for a long time, much longer than I have. And they really are aware of this energy, wisdom energy of Sedona.
Uh-huh.
That it will hold people here only as long as it's necessary, whether that's in their development individually, or we can look at this in development in the family, you know, ancestral line, what have you. And it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone. And so here is this another, speaking of the transpersonal psychology, right, and transpersonal landscape, it is an invitation here to be fully who we are.
Yeah.
And I embrace it. Yes, fully who we are in our everyday and kind of a long trajectory, right, or arc of moving towards becoming who we're meant to be.
Yes.
Yes. And I hope and trust that Sedona will continue to help me in the journey as I help others in that journey as well.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it will. And it's funny because I've never been there myself, but I have thought of going. And I also was supposed to be in Arizona for a conference a few years ago, and then the pandemic came and it was canceled. So I trust that when the time is right, I will go. Maybe I'll come visit you.
Yes.
That's great.
Good planning.
I
like this. Yes.
Yes.
So for me, as you see, it was 11 years in between.
Yes.
First invitation, the first call, to adventure.
Uh-huh.
And the second one, I almost dismissed it. Yes. And if it were not for my friend and honoring my friend, who knows, maybe it would have been another 11 years.
Right. And maybe you would have ended up someplace else. And then it's sometimes interesting to me to think about, you know, these moments in our life when we make a major decision and there's a, you know, a bifurcation, right? Of like this path or this path. And sometimes I think about, you know, what would have happened if I had gone that other way at that moment in time. But I trust, you know, that all the experiences I've had have led me to where I am now, and I'm very happy to be here. So
exactly.
Yeah.
And so this is the meaning making. Yes.
That's
the meaning making.
Absolutely.
We've got to trust that we are where we are for greater reasons that meet the eye, right?
Yeah.
Or intellectual domain. And this is where also transpersonal landscape, transpersonal domains of the psyche, expanded ones, help us to see more. You know, Stanislav Grof has helped us such a great deal, one of the co-founders of transpersonal psychology, to understand that the psyche is so much more than simply a biographical domain, which mainstream honors really well and is really good at working with.
Mm-hmm.
And Stan Grof shared with us that there is, okay, biographical domain, we know how to work with this, we continue to improve on it, working with it. Then there's perinatal
Yes.
Domain, mm-hmm. which is not prenatal, but perinatal, mm-hmm. related to the birth process itself. Mm-hmm. And then there's this vast transpersonal domain, which quite often we are we don't even know where to find ourselves there. Yes. And geographically speaking, I believe from my own lived phenomenological experience that some geographical areas are more supportive of the biographical domains. Others are, yes. more of perinatal, mm-hmm. domain or transpersonal, and some of them are able to hold all of that.
Yes, that's fascinating. And that occurred to me when you were speaking of your childhood and the landscape of the island, because, you know, landscape and geography can have such a powerful impact, as you say, on not only the personal psyche, the transpersonal, cultural, right? You know, different cultures are shaped by the landscape, the weather, the climate, the features of the landscape, you know, in which people find themselves. And that is fascinating. To me. Yes. Yeah.
And those contexts are readily available to us. Yes. Even if we live in a certain area, and the call is to experience directly. Yes.
Yes.
Geographical areas that are supportive of all of us. You know, there's the car, there's the plane, there's even a boat.
Of course. There's so many uh-huh. ways we can explore. But you know what that's spurring for me is, you know, in my own journey, I moved around quite a bit when I was, you know, in my early adult life. But originally from the Washington, D.C. area, grew up in the Midwest, so mostly Northeast Midwest. And then at a certain point, I moved to New Orleans. My sister had moved there to go to grad school, and so I ended up moving there. And, you know, I was so impacted by not only the landscape, but just the feeling of the air being in that much more kind of sultry climate. I started having incredibly vivid dreams, more so than I had ever had in my life, and just all of these ways that the environment really affected me. And then how I came to Austin, where I've lived ever since, is because of Hurricane Katrina, which was an environmental, right, disaster situation phenomenon. And then once I got to Austin and there was a bit of a transition period, you know, I had this very visceral sense of like needing to be on firmer ground.
Yes.
You know, and when you drive from New Orleans to Austin, you know, you're in the swamp, you're at sea level, maybe below sea level. And then you sort of drive and you come into Texas and then you're just gradually rising. It's very subtle, but you're gradually rising. And there was something to me about feeling this very deep need, because I had moved around so much up to that point in my life, to really root down in this place where I felt this sense of firm ground. And like you say, it was very intuitive.
Yes.
You know, of course, there were some rational elements to it, but it was on a very visceral level that I felt that.
And I'm glad that you trusted yourself.
Yes.
And I love how you're describing it to be more on the solid, kind of firm ground.
Yes.
Understanding, right? That foundation. Yes. Understanding.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely lovely.
Well, you mentioned meaning making a moment ago, and that, you know, to me, meaning making is such a central component to what I feel like all the things I do, the coaching, the consulting, the teaching, the creativity, all the things. And so I think that creativity is very much connected to meaning making. And I'm curious for you, like, how do those come together? Creativity, meaning making, and the transpersonal.
Yes, yes. Everyday life really brings them together for me.
Yeah.
And of course, there are certain pivotal punctuated events, be it maybe an intensive, you know, that last summer, for example, I had a privilege and opportunity to attend two different intensives.
Mm-hmm.
One is a 4-day intensive in person with Greg Braden in Sedona. And that second one was a 2-day intensive with Bruce Lipton, also in Sedona. One was in at the end of June. The second was in the end of July.
Yeah.
So they certainly, you know, the events like that, they certainly present special opportunities
yes.
for meaning-making within mm-hmm. it together.
Mm-hmm.
And in everyday life, I mean, let's think about even dreams.
Yes.
For me, when I wake up with a dream that is very vivid for me, and especially if it wakes me up, I know that I need to record it and pin it down in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a notebook next to my bed, and sometimes notebook is just too much effort. So I grab the phone and I find, you know, this recording app. So I have dreams, I have music, I have different folders in it. And so I will actually record in my own voice.
Yeah.
And save it. And the beautiful part of apps like this, they're very simple, but I could go back and add something else mm-hmm. to this as I mini make. For example, you know, recently I had a dream when I woke up from a dream and the sound was with me. You know, some call it, okay, it was just incredible celestial offering, musical offering, and it went on for a number of minutes, and
yeah.
I just did not move. I just, you know, was fully awake, and I enjoyed it. And so for me, I was able to, when experience concluded, yes, I was able to actually record the tune as I recall it.
Right.
And then thinking, okay, what is it about? Uh-huh. And being musically educated, you know, I could actually sing solfeggio, I could put intervals to it, you know, mm-hmm. like on the go. So mm-hmm. this is part of also creative meaning-making process. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. What does it mean if I do solfeggio? What does it mean if I just say it, you know, if it's 1, 5, 3, what have you, in terms of which note, right?
Yes.
Key that is. And then something else happens, you know, during the day where I am reminded.
Mm-hmm.
Look at this. I had a similar experience in Michigan, and this is how that mm-hmm. one went. So there's something about our interest, inclinations, also training, formal or informal,
mm-hmm.
and our own way of educating ourselves that comes in into meaning making. And fortunately, we have individuals around us, Melinda, like you,
mm-hmm.
who we can converse with and have a conversation. All of a sudden, something sparks and says, aha,
yes.
I didn't think about it this way.
Yes.
And then transpersonal domain of it, quite often it presents itself already. You know, if I were to attempt to convince a professional or a human being who really does not see beyond the ordinary world, that was my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Waking up from a dream, for it was the sound. I heard this as you and I are hearing each other right now in the conversation
yeah.
for a prolonged period of time, for a number of minutes. Yes.
Yeah.
And if I were trying to convince them, they will say, I'm making it up. I was dreaming. I was this. I was that. But I know myself transpersonally very well.
Yeah.
Because I have been in transpersonal domains for a very long time. And sharing also, knowing with whom to share when.
Sure.
And with whom not to share.
I think yes.
this is a big part of meaning making and self-trust, because we have to protect what's arising for us until such a time that we're able to speak with few others, trusted others, who actually have the foundation to potentially be able to hold that experience or behold it properly.
Yes, and to value it, you know, to treasure it, as you said earlier in the conversation about those early experiences, you know, and it's funny, we just talked about this in a recent episode in the context of the creative process. And when you're bringing something creative out into the world, you know, it's, it can be a little bit fragile, or we just want to protect that before it's fully hatched, right? And then it's a question of like, how do we go about soliciting feedback on our work? And it's all about finding those trusted people who we know can give us honest and constructive feedback, but they're not going to squash our dream, right? Or that they will simply understand where we're coming from or not just dismiss, right? And it's so funny that you said that because I had a similar experience recently where a song came to me in a dream. And it just, you know, and I remember exactly the setting. I was in this marketplace, all kinds of different people. It was in another country. There were family and at least a friend there. And then this band started playing. This woman started singing this song. And it was like, I woke up and I was like, I have to get this down. And I did, just as you said, you know, I had the phone and I did a voice memo and I just recorded the song and the melody of it and the words that I was able to recall. And then I ended up writing a whole song or receiving perhaps a whole song out of that. And, and what a gift that is.
Exactly. And thank you so much for taking it further again, that that leitmotif, right, that came in and allowing it to develop and writing a song is not a meaning making.
Of course.
Process itself.
Of course. And this particular song that came to me once I started writing out the words, another one of my songwriting collaborators suggested that I just do some free writing, just free association. It's sort of like, you know, amplifying a dream, right? And I just did some free writing on like what associations were coming just from the sort of snippet of lyrics that I received and recalled. And then it actually, when the song took shape, it actually was speaking to a particular time in my life when I was in high school and a particular friendship and relationship that writing the song allowed me to reflect on and integrate that experience from so long ago in a new way.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, also as we work with, and we're speaking about, you know, dreams and how they come and what we could, the gift, right? That boon, and Joseph Campbell used that word in the context of the heroic journey, that boon. Mm-hmm. And he emphasized how important that is for us to find a way to render the essence of that boon or the gift from our heroic journeys to others.
Yes.
To enrich the communities we're in, but not in a way of feeding what is popular or fulfilling, you know, consumer related need, but actually there is deep aesthetics and wisdom and harmony, and again that this cosmic context, right, that we are to include and incorporate and render our gifts in a way that stretch the community.
Yes.
Joseph Campbell, it was very, very important.
Well, and this, I was just again talking about this in a previous episode, my episode actually today that came out with Eben Britton, who, you know, is in the healing and wellness space. And we were talking about, I was talking about the wounded healer archetype, right, which comes out of Jungian psychology, where in our own quest for healing and understanding, once we've acquired some experience or wisdom, then we often feel inspired to then share that with others, you know. And so how do we share that in a way that is authentic, like really authentic to our own experience? And just as you're saying, you know, of course, we all have to make a living in this world somehow, but how do we share authentically with others in a way that is truly authentic and helpful?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes, exactly. You know, what came to mind as you shared with us, thank you for emphasizing authenticity, yes, because that our capacity to be true to ourselves each moment, one moment at a time, it's just priceless. It reminds me of my late maternal grandfather.
Mm.
also back on Sakhalin Island mm-hmm. before we moved to the mainland. When I was young, I distinctly recall then. And as an adult, there were pivotal points where I distinctly recall a very simple teaching game that he played with me. And it went in the form of call and response.
Mm.
So it required my participation.
Yes. Yes.
My verbal participation.
As the best learning games do, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. And I will say it first in Russian and then I translate it.
Because sure.
The mother tongue exactly, you know, holds that, you know, that holistic charge, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So he would say, «Я тебя куплю». And I would answer, «Я не продаюсь». And translation is, he would say, «Я тебя куплю», which means, «I will purchase you».
Hmm.
«I will acquire you».
Hmm.
And my answer is, «Я не продаюсь». I'm not for sale.
Beautiful.
And we played it in such a humorous way that, you know, I at some point I had to stomp my feet and said, like,
no,
say the
I'm
same
not for
thing,
sale.
Stomping my feet, exactly, holding my own ground.
Good.
And as an adult woman, I reflect on it and I think, what a gift he gave me.
Oh, that just hit me. I just had a chill run through, right? Because how many women in particular across cultures,
yes,
you know, don't have that opportunity to say no, to practice and learn saying no,
mm-hmm.
and standing their ground.
Exactly, and insist on their own authentic responses, whatever they may be. Yes, and of course, in mindful ways, but there's so much packed in a simple game.
Yes.
And of course, personally and also transpersonally, we can think of authenticity as an, again, everyday practice.
Yes.
That, you know, as we develop it and as we exercise it, it grows. It qualitatively changes, right? Changes qualitatively.
Yeah.
And it changes us in return. And then, of course, there's this context of the cosmos and cosmic creative principle. Now, if we were to take this game into that cosmic
yes.
ground, that adds many more layers.
I love that. I love that.
Many more layers.
At Syncreate, we're here to support your creative endeavors. So if you have an idea for a project or a new venture, please reach out to us for one-on-one coaching or to learn more about our coaching groups. And the Syncreate podcast is online on all the major podcast channels as well as YouTube. You can learn more at syncreate.org. And please, if you're enjoying the show, reach out, leave us a review if you feel so inspired. And thanks so much for being with us today. Thanks again to Marina for being with us. And we'll see you next time.